Hi, my name is Kathy Tam. I'm with the University of California, Irvine. And today's date is January 6, 2020. And I'm speaking with Gary W. Mackin, who is a PhD at the University of California, Irvine. He's dean of our continuing education unit, and he's also vice provost of our career pathways unit. So we're going to go through a list of questions today. He's going to be addressing the term called 60-year curriculum. So we'll go ahead and get started. Good morning, Gary.
Morning.
So a number of people attribute the creation of the 60-year curriculum to you. How did you come up with this term?
Actually, I don't know how I came up with the term. It was certainly not originated by me, but I cannot for the life of me figure out where I first heard that term. But what did happen is I think I resurrected the term from a long past history of continuing education. And the notion of the 60-year curriculum has been widely accepted primarily recently by the fact that many of my colleagues, including particularly Hunt Lambert at Harvard University, really took this whole notion of the 60-year curriculum on and has been articulating it. So I'm very happy to be a part of a group that's really promoting the 60-year curriculum.
So can you explain the concept of the 60-year curriculum a little bit more in detail?
Yes, certainly. You know, everybody now accepts pretty much the idea that we need to be involved in life, all of us need to be involved in lifelong learning. But lifelong learning is what individuals do. The 60-year curriculum is what the university response to the lifelong learning concept is. And so lifelong learning is an individual need, and the university responds by creating formal learning experiences for people throughout their lifetimes.
So why is the time frame 60 years? Why isn't it some other time frame?
Well, it's a little bit arbitrary, but basically, in my mind, the 60-year curriculum begins in the freshman year because we're really emphasizing higher education in this concept. The duration is somewhat arbitrary, but 60 seems to be a reasonable time frame. Basically, if you start as a freshman at age 18, the 60-year curriculum would theoretically go to age 78, but the same educational requirements of a 78-year-old probably apply to a 92-year-old. So
okay.
Really, it's basically a frame that indicates the length of time that universities really should be involved in education.
Okay, so what do you mean by a curriculum?
A curriculum really is the notion of formal learning experience. We all learn all the time. Obviously, lifelong learning is a ubiquitous concept. We're learning all the time, but basically what we're really talking about here is the university response, and the university responds with formal learning experiences. And so we're really talking about something that's really put together to help people throughout their careers and throughout their lifetimes in terms of basically formal learning experiences.
Okay. So building off of that, you've called the 60-year curriculum an imperative for higher education. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, universities are all going to have to embrace this concept or they're going to lose credibility. The notion is that increasingly we cannot rely, we cannot just accept as a goal in higher education the graduation of our students. We have to continue to be relevant to their lives after they graduate if we're going to maintain our position in society. And so we really, no university can avoid thinking about the 60-year curriculum, and especially what happens after graduation. But I'd also like to point out that the 60-year curriculum is not only for individuals. That is, we're not serving only individuals, but we're also serving at the same time regional economic development. Basically, the 60-year curriculum talks a lot about improving the workforce in any particular region. And certainly, employers in any particular region really need from the university talent. And this 60-year curriculum addresses not only then the individual needs, but those individuals go into the regional economy and make contributions to that economy and really help help society in general.
Okay, so you've built on the concept of the 60-year curriculum. So why is it important for universities, maybe across the U.S. or internationally, and why is it important to UC Irvine?
Well, basically, the 60-year curriculum, to my mind, really embraces learner-centeredness. We all want to be learner-centered. When the Pew organization did a survey of students and parents across the country, 86% of those students and their parents listed getting a good career or getting a meaningful career as the main motivation for going to college or university. And basically, if the colleges and universities don't accept that notion and don't understand that that's why students are going to college, then they're really not being learner-centered. And so the first thing is that it really recognizes the responsibility of university and society. Another situation is that universities are becoming much more accountable for what they're doing. Obviously, the high cost of higher education, the high level of student debt, these factors really are pushing universities to be held accountable for what the results are, not just the graduation results or the time to degree or what the standard metrics, but also what happens to people after they graduate. Are they successful? It's basically a basis for a continued positive relationship with graduates as they go through many life changes, from school to career, from career to career, job to job, from career to retirement, and even now from life to death. All of these major transitions in lives are something that the university can contribute to positively, and so basically universities really have to recognize this concept. It also, of course, as I say that, it also means that the 60-year curriculum improves the institutional competitive position. If a university is known not only for its ability to graduate students, but also to support those students after they graduate, that really improves the competitive position of universities in a much more competitive world than we've been used to dealing with. And finally, one of the most important things is it improves educational outcomes.
So when you talk about educational outcomes and the importance of university accountability and responsibility, how does the 60-year concept really improve an educational outcome?
Well, we hear a lot about something called active learning now. Active learning and deeper learning is something that is hitting the texts and the research. And the basis of active learning is relevance. Relevance in coursework, what relevance really means is relevance to the lives of students. The more we can incorporate real-world relevant case studies, examples, exercises into our educational treatments, the better we're going to be. The better students are going to learn, the more effective we will be, and the more important the more it will this learning will go further on past graduation, helping these students understand, again, relevant issues as they turn and enter the workforce.
Okay, so you've presented the concept and have pretty much done a really deep dive about what the concept is about. So in your opinion now, what do you think universities should do?
Well, of course, especially given my titles, they should certainly increase the visibility and resources of career services. And that's happening across the country. More and more universities are really understanding that career services is an important component of undergraduate and graduate education, and that the students really who have some basic intentionality toward what happens after they graduate are much better students. They get better grade point averages, their time to degree is less, they have greater satisfaction with their education. And so the first thing is to increase the resources and the visibility of career services. And in fact, at UCI, that's what we've done with the creation of a new position called the Vice Provost for Career Pathways. We have recognized that career service is something that needs to be at the table when resource allocation decisions are being made. The second thing, of course, again, is expand continuing education. Continuing education is really the heart of the 60-year curriculum. That's what universities have been doing for a long time, some more extensively than others, but the expansion of continuing education opportunities for graduates and even for undergraduates as you try to articulate the undergraduate experience with the needs of continuing education, needs for continuing education, very important. And finally, I think we should also make sure that the three units on campus that are most involved and concerned with what happens to graduates after they graduate are, of course, the Career Services Unit, the Continuing Education Unit, and the Alumni Association. Forming a strong partnership between those three elements is really important for any university to try to accomplish.
So if those three departments or units were combined and had some type of coordination, talking about career services, continuing education, and alumni, what do you think that's likely to achieve?
Well, first of all, one of the main reasons that employers and organizations and corporations, one of the main reasons they turn to the university is for talent. And the talent pools, obviously, usually we think of the talent pool in a university as their regularly enrolled students. But in fact, those students are pretty much oriented toward entry-level positions, even at the graduate level. But when you add continuing education students and when you add alumni, you get three very extensive pools of talent that might be tapped by local employers. And so coordination between career services, continuing education, and the alumni associations is really important in order to provide sort of a one-stop shop for employers who need talent from the university. And part of this involves sharing the use of technology as we've done at UCI, taking technology such as resume evaluation technology, practice interview technology, and other technologies. When we provide all three talent pools with these resources, we get a very, very strong base for combining these talent pools. And the other thing is there's this strange situation where, at least in our university and most universities, where career services is really funded by student fees, what happens is that exactly the time that students need services, career services, is when they graduate, and at that time there's no real funding for helping these students. And so combining continuing education, the Alumni Association, really is something that needs to be in order to create a seamless delivery of service. The other thing is that the other reason for this coordination is the notion that employers want to be involved in all kinds of relationships with the talent of the university. And one of the major emphasis on most university campuses is getting really very high degree of relationships with local employers. And these three talent pools give universities an opportunity to expand their services and to relate very, very dynamically and effectively with local employers.
So in addition to all those points you just made, which are fantastic, is there anything that you else that you can see that you can expand upon that universities can do?
Yes, well, the first thing, of course, is to, going back to the notion of active learning and so forth, the first thing is to encourage relevant learning objects in regular courses. I've covered that a little bit already, but the notion is that the more we can bring career relevant and workplace relevant experiences into our classrooms, the better our students are going to be prepared for entering the workforce. And that there's an also the other side of it is to create local mechanisms for identifying local skill gap. We've heard a lot about skills gaps. Employers saying that when graduates graduate, they lack certain kinds of skills. When we queried our local employers, we found, for instance, that the employers really felt that students coming into their workforce did not know Excel. They didn't have any idea about how to work Excel or Microsoft Office. So these two basic technologies are a skill gap. And so as we go forward, if we could identify these kinds of skill gaps and incorporate them into our courses, the better off our students are going to be. Another thing universities can do is expand open education. Open education has certainly given a lot of help to students around the world as they think about going into a new career or learning new skills. And so the expansion of open education, particularly directed at students and the local workforce to learn skills that are really necessary to fill the skill gaps, that's a really important element also to consider. Another thing to do is to, as I mentioned earlier, is to acquire support the correct kind of supporting technology. There's tremendous technologies out there associated with career services, including something called Handshake. VMOC is an AI related based resume evaluation technology. Big Interview is something that we have, which is basically helps students practice their interview skills. Acquiring those technologies, that particularly when you have a large number of students on your campus, such as UCI with 36,000 students, and a fairly restricted set of resources to supply career services. On our campus, we have 17 people in order to serve the 36,000 students. We have to figure out some way of creating services at scale, and technology is part of the answer. Another thing we can do, which we've done at UCI, is to articulate regular degree courses with continuing education courses. So, for instance, we have gone through the UCI catalog and found courses that really fulfill the need for our certificate programs. Certificate programs such as paralegal certificate, personal financial planning certificate. When we can give students credit toward those certificates from their regular courses, that's really a good way to expand career services for students and get them ready for the workforce. Another thing that a lot of universities are doing is support learning in retirement. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute institutes are available around the country, and those and other learning and retirement courses are really kind of fill out the card for continuing education in universities. And finally, we really need to look at the creation of digital credentials. Digital credentials are extremely important.
So you just mentioned digital credentials, and I think a lot of us have seen that term now thrown around maybe in the media or the education trade journals. So we also understand that maybe digital credentials are called badges. Can you explain that concept about digital credentials and maybe more about what it is?
Digital credentials are so important that I consider them another educational imperative. Universities who do not understand or do not adopt digital credentials will lose their competitive advantage. Digital credentials open up a new world for universities to be really very relevant to our society and to the needs of our society. Basically, the digital credentials used in their best way are attestations of competency, not of learning achievement, but of competency for students. And again, going back to the skills gap, if we can identify skills gaps in the workforce and then provide competency-based assessments for people who have those skills, we will be doing a great service for our local economies. But this really involves input from employers. And that's exactly what we need in universities. We need more input from the users of our product, you might say, the students who enter, who graduate from us and go into the workforce. That's basically what we're producing. And when we really involve the employers in figuring out what kind of credentials to issue, that's when we're really making a win. And I just want to reemphasize one thing. Universities are used to providing attestations certifications of learning achievement. Learning achievement is different than competency. And competency really means not only have you learned something, but you're actually able to use that learning in a very practical way. And so the case I use, would you be happy to be operated on by a brain surgeon who got a B plus in brain surgery? Probably not.
Right.
85% competency in brain surgery is not something that you want to go with. And so basically we want to, we'll be entering a brand new realm, but it's a realm that really will expand, again, our relevance to the society and relevance to regional economy and also improve our educational outcomes.
So let's turn our attention a little bit more to UC Irvine and what the campus is doing for the 60-year concept. How is the 60-year curriculum part of UCI's daily service?
Well, first of all, the main thing that we've done, and I think it's absolutely unique in higher education, is to create an administrative union between continuing education and career services on our campus. At the same time, when we put those two units under the same administrative responsibility, we're creating strong partnerships with the Alumni Association. So again, going back to the coordination of those three units, UCI is really, I think, a leader in that space. And again, there are a lot of barriers in many campuses for the union of these three units, but we've been able to accomplish that. And it's now almost 2 years that we've been in this position. We're already seeing a great deal of synergy between the units. The second thing is to infuse career focus in regular courses. That means, again, putting relevant case studies into courses, providing career information along with courses, creating programs such as Life 101 that helps students really address some of the problems they'll face, not only in their academic careers, but in their careers after they graduate. Another thing is what we just talked about, which is digital credentials. Those at UCI, we've developed a digital credentialing process, and we're regularly certifying competency and skills such as Excel and and several other and certainly some technologies in the IT space. We're issuing badges on those. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute is something we've been dedicated to for many years. Has over 750 members right now, and so that really helps us provide the help for, again, the transition from career to retirement, and people in OLLI get a chance to go back and refresh their education, sometimes renew their education in fields that they were interested in when they were undergraduates but never really got a chance to follow up on, and certainly the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute helps that. Again, another thing, the use of technology. The use of technologies I talked about, use of technology in classrooms, in combining the three talent pools that we talked about. Those are really, that's really another important thing that we've been doing at UCI in coordinating the use of those technologies across the three talent pools.
So it sounds like there is quite a momentum for the 60-year curriculum, and that universities, exceptionally UC Irvine, are starting to embrace that 60-year curriculum. What do you think will happen in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, based on what I've just said, clearly digital credentials will rise in importance and become their own institutional imperative, as I said before. This is really something that every university is going to have to embrace, and certainly, again, UCI is working on that very hard. Open education will create much expanded opportunities for people to learn anything, anytime, anywhere for free. And self-learners will increase, and those self-learners will become associated with the university in very organic ways. In our open education, which UCI is a leader in open education, we have over 73% of the students who take our open courses are outside the United States. And so our institutional reputation is expanded by these open education. At the same time, we're fulfilling our public service mission to provide education to as many people as we can. The 60-year curriculum will create closer, enduring ties between college graduates and higher education institutions, with very positive consequences. Not only will we be able to serve the students that have graduated from our own institution, but we'll be able to serve students who have graduated from institutions that are outside our area but come to places like UCI, which is a university down their street, which has a great deal of resources, particularly in continuing education, to draw from. And so they will definitely create closer, the 60-year curriculum will definitely create closer ties in the community. And finally, the new technologies will increase the integration of learning and life. This is very important. We've always, at least in my generation, we always felt that education was sort of a separate formal process, that we got up in the morning and we got to class and we listened and we sat in class and we listened and we prepared our exams and for our exams and so forth. But increasingly, as we all know, we can all wake up in the morning and get on our cell phones and learn stuff if we want to, if it's available. And certainly mobile application is the growing impulse in continuing education. And so we'll be able to learn any place, any time, and that's really an important dynamic in what's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years.
So, in wrapping up this discussion, we've got a great fact here. So you came from UC Berkeley to UC Irvine, and you're now in your 47th year in the field of university continuing education, which is absolutely outstanding. So what does your experience tell you now about what the future holds for continuing education?
Well, my career actually was very fortunate, because it spanned at least the beginning of what has been called the second revolution in higher education. The first revolution was propelled by the invention of the printing press in 1688 or something like that. And really, higher education was not transformed until the internet came along. And the internet and online learning really happened about 1994. It happened earlier than that for sure, but 1994 is when online education really became important in higher education. And so my career has spanned that. And one of the things I learn as I look back is that change is very rapid, but universities will endure because they can adapt. One of the criticisms of higher education is it doesn't change rapidly. Well, I'm not sure about that at all. The first MOOCs were created by Stanford University. Online education was started by universities. Universities can adapt, and they will adapt to these new concepts, and I think they will endure because of this adaptability and because they have a clear notion that learners are important. Certainly, continuing education will become much more of a core function, but there'll be a lot more competition as non-higher education institutions, including corporations and for-profit organizations, try to take a part of that $1.5 trillion a year budget for professional education that we see coming at us. And so the competition will definitely increase and will force us to be much more competitive and much more market-oriented. I guess as I look back, it's exciting to be where we are now. We have great challenges, but we also have great opportunities. And I'm really looking forward to my next 47 years in continuing education.
We are too. So, Gary, thank you so much for giving us such a great presentation of the 60-year curriculum. One thing that I would like to announce is that you can learn more about the UC Irvine Division of Continuing Education by logging on to ce.uci.edu. Again, thank you so much for your time today, Gary. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kathy. How many minutes?